Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the popes right after this. A $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it, and a Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. A fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that governments do to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make? They have to prepare it, cook it, serve it, and pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? So why does government get paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like to have more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And it's free. That's the best part. It's free of charge. Tax and Status is available. That's our school on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. We should do it right now before you forget. Hey, we've been talking about this book that's entitled The Babylon Mystery Religion. So far, we've taken a look at the Inquisition, the Antichrist, and what the Reformers had to say about this thing called Antichrist. We took a look at obelisks and crosses. And I thought it would be realistic for us to take a look at the head of the Roman Catholic Church. What about the popes? I don't know how many there have been. I haven't counted them up. But, you know, a pope is generally elected pope when he's pretty old. You know, he's 50, 60 years old by the time he gets elected. This last pope that was just elected, he was in his 70s. So it's not very likely, you know, that he's going to last very long. The last pope lasted about 25 or 30 years. When I was born, the pope, I think, if I remember right, was Pope Pius the 12th. And I thought this guy had immortality because, you know, from the time I was born till I was about 12, 13, 15 years old, something like that, that was the Pope. You know, he's appointed for life. He's kind of like the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And so he'd been in there for a long time. The reason I bring this to your attention is because there's been lots of popes. So my guess would be there's been 100. In the 200-year history of the United States, we've had about 40-some presidents, 43 or 4. In 200 years, 40 presidents, and they served for about 4 or 5 years, you know, 4 years, 8 years maybe. Had one served 13, but that was an anomaly. Now, popes, you know, some of them haven't been in office very long. I can remember one pope, he was made pope here just not too many years ago. And he died in 30 days. We had a president do that. He was elected president, and he died in 1 month. When somebody gets elected and he dies in the first month of his office, it makes me suspicious that maybe the wrong one was elected, and we have to have a change, whether it's a president or a pope. But my guess is that there's been 100, maybe even 200 of these popes. So a question arises. Well, how have these popes behaved? Are they pretty good guys, you know, on balance? Now, we've had some good presidents, and we've had some pretty poor presidents. Some of them have behaved pretty well. Some of them have behaved pretty poorly. Bill Clinton, I thought, behaved pretty poorly there with that Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, and all of his various and sundry sexual escapades or triests or, that he was involved in. And so we've had preachers, you know, like Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart. And we have this thing now called the Catholic molestation cases, you know, where Catholic priests are being sued and the Catholic Church is being sued for all of these sodomite-type molestations of boys. I don't know that they're raping little girls, but they seem to be molesting the boys in the Catholic Church. And I think the thing that surprised me the most about the Catholics, not that there was molestation or that there was sexual improprieties per se, because I would suspect that that's probably true among plumbers, carpenters, and electricians also. Now, I identify with plumbers, carpenters, and electricians because I'm one of them. And I don't think that plumbers and carpenters and construction people in general hold themselves up as being the pillars of virtue in the society. Most of the guys that I know would freely admit to going to Flo's Whorehouse, going down to the Blue Room, having a few rounds with the boys, and probably getting knocked down, drag out, drunk, and driving home while he was drunk. I don't know of any construction worker that wouldn't have done all of the above. Well, I shouldn't say I don't know of any. I know of a couple guys that actually are Seventh-day Adventist. I know one guy, and he's an old logger, and an old buddy. And I don't think he ever did that. But boy, he's an exception. And there may be a couple of you guys out there, you know, that Jehovah's Witness maybe, or a Seventh-day Adventist, and maybe you were raised in the church or something like that, and you never got involved in all these wicked and evil things, you know, that us ordinary guys do. But we don't hold ourselves out as being pillars in the society. I don't think that I've run across very many longshoremen that stood up there, you know, on a soapbox preaching Jesus and Him crucified. I never saw that down on the docks. I never saw it out at the truck stop. You know, we're bad guys and we don't make any bones about it. In ancient times there was a guy by the name of David, old King David, and he was quite a rounder, this David guy. God, the creator of the universe. And surprisingly, this guy David, I mean, this guy goes out. I've got to tell you a couple of stories about this David, in case you know maybe you haven't read the Bible too much, and many of us haven't. But this guy, King David over here, he's the guy that killed Goliath. Remember that when you went to Sunday school? They tell you the good stories about David, about him killing Goliath, and the only thing. They don't tell you the bad story. This King David, he's got a couple of bad stories. And there was a young woman. He liked her. She was the daughter of the king. And he wanted to marry her, so he went out and he killed 200 Philistines. You know, in modern parlance today, he went out and killed 200 Muslims and cut off their foreskins. Although I don't think he could do that to the Muslims because they're circumcised. But I just thought I'd point that out. He killed 200 people, cut off their foreskins, brought them back, gave them to King Saul, and says, "Okay, here's the bride price." I thought that was pretty. Pretty good story. And then, you know, talk about a guy, a killer. I mean, this guy is a bloody man. In fact, he was called by God a bloody man. He killed people right and left. He was a professional killer. He was a George Patton of his day. And there was a couple other stories about him, but one of them had to do with a little Bill Clinton type problem there. He saw this young woman down here taking a shower. And right away, he thought she was pretty neat stuff. And so He started seeing her husband was in the army. And this woman's name was Bathsheba, and her husband's name, I forget it now, but he was in the army. And so David was getting a little on the side from this guy's wife, you know, while he was off fighting in the war. And so she turns up pregnant. Well, right away, old David, you know, he says, "Oh, my God." You know, she turns up pregnant, and now, you know, the word's liable to get out. And so he calls this guy back from you know, it'd be like President Bush calling somebody back from Iraq and saying, hey, I appreciate your service over here, son. Why don't you go on home, spend a week with your wife, and then go on back to Iraq. And so this guy was a real gung-ho Marine type, you know, and he said, no, I'm not going to go home and have sex with the wife and take leave over here while my fellows are over here getting shot up and killed in Baghdad. That's not going to happen. So he was a very honorable type Marine guy, and so he wouldn't go home to his wife. He slept out in the street. And so David's plan was about to come unraveled. So, you know, David then goes to his commanders, you know, probably a top general, say, take this guy back to Iraq and stick him up in the front lines and then withdraw from him so that he gets killed in action. And they did. And this guy got killed. I'll tell you something about the army. I'm not too sure that I'd trust too many of them army guys. Well, anyway, this guy, Bathsheba's husband, gets killed. And so David's in the clear now, you know. This woman's knocked up, but it's okay. She, you know, he can always say, well, it was her husband. Remember, he came home, you know, and so obviously he must have been sleeping with his wife for a day or two. And there she turned up pregnant. Of course, the baby's probably going to be born about a little early, you know, a couple of months, something like that. So, you know, this guy was a rounder. And he got caught, and so God called him in. There was a prophet. I think his name was Nathan. He came into the king one day. It's quite a little story. He came into the king and he said, "Hey, you got a guy out here who's got thousands of sheep. I mean, this guy's filthy rich. He's got sheep everywhere. And the guy that's filthy rich and has thousands of sheep, he goes over to his neighbor who has one prize ewe. I mean, he's got one sheep, but it's one hell of a sheep. He don't have thousands, but he's got one. And the one is a blue ribbon winner." And so the guy with the thousands of sheep has killed this man and stolen his prize ewe. And David, when he heard this story, was just incensed. He said, "Bring the guy before me, and we will slay him." And so Nathan the priest, he said, "Well, the reason I told you this story is because I was kind of curious to know what you thought of somebody that would do such a thing." And David said, "Well, that's what I think of him. I think he needs to be killed." It's one of those guys we were talking about the other day. You know, some people need killing. And so David said, "This guy needs killing." And Nathan agreed. He said, "Yeah, I think you're right. I think this guy needs killing." And David said, "Well, who is this guy?" And Nathan, the prophet, pointed his finger at David and said, "It's you. You're the one that needs killing. You're the one that killed this Hittite soldier out here and stole his wife Bathsheba." Now, David, when he heard that story, you know, he was just kind of cut to the quick. And so he repented in short order. He said, "You know, you're right about that. You know, I am guilty." Now, this guy David, who was called a man after God's own heart, he was a little different breed of cat. He admitted that he was wrong, admitted that he had done a wicked and evil thing. And he went to God and he said, "You know, I'm just guilty as hell. I need killing. I deserve being killed. I really don't want to die. You know, I'm just like everybody else. I want to go out and break the law, but I don't want to have to pay the piper." But he admitted it readily, as opposed to another king, his predecessor, King Saul. Whenever he broke the law, whenever he sinned, he would always make excuses. You know, he's kind of like Adam. You know, when Adam got called on the carpet for eating off of the tree, he blamed his wife. He didn't say, "You know, you're right. I ate off that tree and I'm guilty as hell and I probably ought to be killed for that." And he blamed his wife. When God went to Eve and said, "How come you did this?" He said, "Well, my fault. It was that damn snake you sent in here, you know. God, it's your own fault. You're the proximate cause of your own injury." And when we do that, it really ticks him off. He doesn't care much for that at all. He kind of likes people that own up to their own mistakes. And that's why he called David a man after his own heart. It wasn't that David was particularly righteous. He was kind of a rounder. He was a killer. He was a philanderer. He wasn't the, you know, the pillar in society. But when he was, you know, confronted with his criminal behavior, he owned up to it and he said, well, you know, you're right about that, and I'm sorry as hell. I won't do that again. Well, he never did go out and kill another man and steal his wife. From that point on, you know, he was a pretty good guy. And that kind of reminded me of this Jimmy Swaggart guy, because, you know, Jimmy Swaggart, he's one of these evangelists, and he was out philandering. He was out seeing some whores down at Flo's place. Not that that oven by itself, you know, is necessarily a top criminal activity. You know, a lot of us have done that. You know, some of us outgrew it, some of us didn't. Well, anyway, old Jimmy Swaggart, he gets caught out here, you know, he's out with this whore. And so, of course, he's an evangelist, he's a religious guy, and he's got this church over here, so that doesn't look too good. So he was on TV, I saw him, it was very convincing, put on a sterling performance, tears streaming down his face. He said, "Oh, God, I have sinned." And I thought to myself, well, you know, that reminds me of King David. You know, he made a mistake. He got caught. And then he stands up in front of everybody and he says, "Listen, I'm just sorry as hell. I made a mistake and I repent. I'm not going to do that again." I couldn't find much fault with that. And so I bought it at face value. And I said, well, I really admire that Jimmy Swaggart, because, you know, he apologized. He acknowledged the fact that he was dead wrong. He made a mistake, and so he repented of it. And I think we all ought to forgive him. At least that's the way I saw it, and I thought he was quite a guy. Well, then some time goes by. And then one day, Jimmy Swagger gets caught out here again, down at Flo's whorehouse. You know, I looked at that the second time, and I said, well, you know, I don't find a whole lot of fault with a guy going down to Flo's place, you know, maybe once a week and getting caught once or twice. But I find a lot wrong with it when a guy comes out here and he says, you know, I admit I'm wrong and I made a bad mistake and I'm just sorry as hell, and you go out and you do it again. David didn't do that. He was a little different kind of guy. When he made a mistake and it was pointed out to him, he stopped doing that. And it would seem like to me that Jimmy Swaggart should stop philandering with whores. I mean, I just, you know, if you're gonna be a preacher and walk around over here telling people, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, the average truck driver, you know, who's out here at Flo's place, you know, he's not out here standing on a soapbox telling you guys, don't go down to Flo's. He goes down to Flo's. He doesn't see anything wrong with that. And so he's a philanderer. I mean, after all, it's a long time, you know, before he's going to be home to see the old lady again, so. There's another guy here named Jim Baker, and he's a pretty good guy, too. I'm sure he had a wife named Tammy Faye. She died here not too long ago. Jim Baker, probably a nice guy. I don't know the guy personally, but. Anyway, he goes out, and he breaks some laws, and he got caught. He was having an affair with his secretary, and one thing and another. I don't know if he did the Jimmy Swaggart trip or not. I didn't see that, but. Anyway, went to jail. He's back on the air. I saw him the other day. He's on TV. Jim Baker. And then there's this Catholic molestation case. You know, we got all these Catholic priests out here. And here's the thing that really caught my eyeball on this immorality with Catholic priests. I could see one or two priests, you know, being wayward. Hell, I would imagine there's probably even some Seventh-day Adventist preachers out here that may be wayward. But it's... I don't think it's endemic. I don't think, you know, it's a third of them. And that's the number that came out of the Catholic Church up in Boston. The Catholic Church in Boston admitted that one-third of the priests are either pedophiles or sodomites. A third of them. That's one out of three. I mean, I guess you can count. Well, listen, if a third of them up in Boston are sodomites or pedophiles, do you think that the Catholic clergy out in Los Angeles has less than that, more than that, or about the same? Now, there are, you know, some cases that, like Jim Baker and Jim Swagger, that come up. But I've never heard the Methodist Church, and I've never heard the Baptist Church or the Seventh-day Adventists or anybody else. And I imagine there's these cases come up. They're more like, yeah, but I've never heard one of these other Protestant churches come up here and say, well, one-third of our clergy over here now are sodomites or pedophiles. When I see this, I say to myself, well, just where does this immorality stem from? What caused it? Where does it come from? If it's that endemic in the Boston Archdiocese, you know, as just an average run-of-the-mill reporter, just a Joe Sixpack out here, my conclusion is that one-third of the Catholic clergy worldwide are pedophiles or sodomites. One-third of them, worldwide. I don't think that that's something that you're going to find in Boston. Because they're paying these same judgments out in Los Angeles and Chicago, all over the United States. I mean, there's people coming forward saying, hey, when I was 10 years old, this priest over here was molesting me. Hey, when I was in the youth group over here, the Catholic priest, he was molesting me. This is all over the United States. Yeah, you mean you Canadians up there, your priests up there, they don't do that. These Catholic priests, you know, in Italy, they're not doing that. And if they are, which I highly suspect that they are, where in the world does this come from? Well, here in the book, remember this book now that we've been covering here called Babylon Mystery Religion over here, there's a thing called immorality. There's a chapter in here called Papal Immorality. It's chapter 12. I could hardly believe my eyeballs when I read it. You know, I'm a historian. I read a lot of history books. I've read about the Inquisitions. I gave you this story about the Inquisition the other day. Practically made me bawl. You know, there's stories that come across my desk. Sometimes I can hardly believe what I'm seeing. And this papal immorality over here was another one of those cases. And I can see where the immorality in the Catholic Church comes from. It comes right from the top. Listen to the story. And most of this comes from the Catholic Encyclopedia. So like the Boston case, it isn't the Protestants. It's not the Baptists or the Methodists, or the Seventh-day Adventists that are accusing the Catholic clergy in Boston of being immoral. It's the Catholic clergy in Boston who have paid the damages, pled guilty, and told us, yeah, we've been doing this, and about one-third of them are this way. So I'm not here to tell you to drop out of the Catholic Church, but I thought maybe you ought to be aware of, you know, this doesn't get started here at the priest level down at the bottom. It starts right up at the top. Now, in addition to the conclusive evidence that has been given, the very character and morals of many of the popes, now I'll underline the word many here. In the Bible, when we see the word many, it applies to 51%. That's more than half. Many of the popes would tend to identify themselves as successors of pagan priests rather than representatives of Christ or the Apostle Peter. Some of the popes were so depraved and base in their actions, even people who professed no religion at all were ashamed of them. Such sins as adultery, sodomy, simony, rape, murder, and drunkenness are among the sins that have been committed by popes. To link such sins with men who have claimed to be the Holy Father, the Vicar of Christ, and Bishop of Bishops may sound shocking. But those acquainted with the history of the papacy well know that not all popes have been holy men. Now, Pope Sergius III, from 904 to 911 AD, obtained the papal office by murder. The annals of the Church of Rome tell about his life of open sin with a woman named Marozia, who bore him several illegitimate children. He was described by Baronius as a monster and by Gregorovius, or Gregorovius, as a terrorizing criminal. Says one historian, for 7 years this man occupied the chair of St. Peter, while his concubine and her Semiramis-like mother held court with a pomp and voluptuousness that recalled the worst days of the ancient empire. This woman, Theodora, who was likened to Semiramis because of her corrupt morals, along with Marozia, the pope's concubine, filled the papal chair with their paramours and bastard sons, and turned the papal palace into a den of robbers. The reign of Pope Sergius III began the period known as the Rule of Harlots. All right? So there's one. Now, you know, you might say, well, Adolf Hitler was an aberration. No. He was just one petty dictator who got to power for 13 years and killed a lot of people. He was a bad guy. But when we took a look here at the Roman Catholic popes in the Inquisitions, we found that these Inquisitions lasted from 1209 through 1556, 347 years. Wasn't it? Let me put it in my little computer here. 1556. And take away 1209. Yeah, 347 years. That's more than one pope. I don't know how many popes it was, but it was 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 popes in 347 years. I mean, if these guys averaged 25 years on the throne, 347 divided by 25 would be 14 popes. That'd be 14. I don't know what the average reign of a pope is on the chair, but the last one here was Pope John. He was there quite a long time, 25 years seemed to me. That was a pretty long reign. If they average 25 years, which they don't, but I'm just saying if they did, be 15. Hey, when you come up with 10 or 15 guys, I mean, you've got a systemic problem here, don't you? I mean, if we had 10 or 15 Bill Clintons in a row, don't you think we'd have a systemic problem? Now, Pope John the X, from 914 to 928, originally had been sent to Ravenna, R-A-V-A-N-N-A, Ravenna, as an archbishop. But Theodora had him returned to Rome and appointed to the papal office, according to Bishop Lutprandt of Cremona, who wrote a history about 50 years after this time. Theodora supported John's election in order to cover more easily her illicit relations with him. But his reign came to a sudden end when Marozia smothered him to death. She wanted him out of the way so Pope Leo VI from 928 to 929 could become pope. His reign also was a short one, for he was assassinated also by Marozia when she learned that he had given his heart to a more degraded woman than herself. So not long after this, the teenage son of Marozia, under the name of John the 11th, became pope. The Catholic Encyclopedia says some taking Lutprand, L-I-U-T-P-R-A-N-D, and the Liber Pontificalis as their authority, assert that he was the natural son of Sergius III, that was a former pope, through the intrigues of his mother who ruled at that time in Rome. He was raised to the chair of Peter, but in quarreling with some of his mother's enemies, he was beaten and put into jail where he died from poisoning. In 955, the grandson of Marozia, at 18 years of age, became pope under the name of John the 12th. The Catholic Encyclopedia describes him as a coarse, immoral man whose life was such that the Lateran was spoken of as a brothel, and the moral corruption in Rome became the subject of general odium. On the 6th of November, a synod composed of 50 Italian and German bishops was convened in St. Peter's. John was accused of sacrilege, simony, perjury, murder, adultery, and incest, and was summoned in writing to defend himself. Refusing to recognize the synod, John pronounced sentence of excommunication against all participators participators in the assembly. Should they elect in his stead another pope, John the 12th took bloody vengeance on the leaders of the opposite party. Cardinal Deacon John had his right hand struck off. Bishop Otgar of Speyer was scourged. A high Palatine official lost nose and ears. John died on 14th of May 964, 8 days after he had been, according to rumor, stricken by paralysis in the act of adultery. Where'd that come from? Catholic Encyclopedia. Hey, listen, boys and girls, we got admissions right from the best source. Now, as a litigator, I can tell you that there's nothing better than on cross-examination to extract a confession or a statement of incrimination from the witness on the stand out of his own mouth. I mean, this is, you know, some of the best testimony that you can get here. You know, if you get it right from the people involved. It's not nearly as good. It's not necessarily bad if an opposing party comes in and testifies against somebody. But you know, in the scripture, God tells us that, you know, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So the Catholic Church isn't denying this. The Catholic Encyclopedia is printing it. It's kind of like the Jewish Encyclopedia. I like the Jewish Encyclopedia because much of what the Jews are doing is admitted to by them in their own writing. Hell, they're not hiding it. Catholics are doing the same way. I had an old-timey guy one time say to me, you know, if you want to know what Roman Catholics believe, if you want to know what Roman Catholics teach, don't go to a Baptist. Go to a Roman Catholic. He'll tell you. He'll let you know. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. We're talking about the popes. But let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all, and the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals by prearrangement. That also includes Catholics. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Keep in mind, however, that these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour come from political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic sources. Those are ethnic, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are taking a look here at the popes. I don't know how many popes there have been, but my guess is that there is at least 100. Over 2,000 years, let's take a look at that. If we go back here approximately 2,000 years, I think that's a safe number, and we divide that by 25, we would have 80 popes at 25-year reigns each. I do not believe that these popes have reigned for an average of 25 years. Some of them have been a year or two. I can remember one in my lifetime, 30 days. Pope Pius the 12th was, I think it was 12 or 15 years. Mike, I'm going to just use a number 100. I think 100 is safe. Now, we've got 100 of these popes. Now, you know, if one or two or five of these guys are bad guys, I don't think that that reflects on the Catholic Church negatively. But if we had 10, 15, or 20, 25 of them, I'd say you've got a systemic problem here. I mean, you know, when 25% of them are rounders, you know, that tells you quite a little story. Especially when you run around saying these guys are infallible. Not that you're saying some of them are infallible. All of them are infallible. And they've got a doctrine here in Roman Catholicism. You know, these people represent God himself. I mean, they've got some pretty wild claims here. And so, talking about these first several popes over here, we'll come now to a guy by the name of Pope Boniface the VII. He maintained his position through a lavish distribution of stolen money. The Bishop of Orleans, referred to him and also John the 12th and Leo the 8th as monsters of guilt, reeking in blood and filth, and as Antichrist sitting in the temple of God. Now this is... Hey, wait a minute. This isn't some Catholic, you know, who's turned heretic and become a Protestant. It's Pope Boniface. And it's one of the popes says, hey, these other popes over here, these guys are monsters. The Catholic Encyclopedia says, okay, so here we're getting it right out of the Catholic Encyclopedia, right from the horse's mouth here. Says he overpowered John the 14th in April of 984, thrust him into a dungeon at St. Angelo, where the wretched man died 4 months later. For more than a year, Rome endured this monster, steeped in the blood of his predecessors, but the vengeance was terrible. After his sudden death in July of 985, due in all probability to violence, the body of Boniface was exposed to the insults of the populace, dragged through the streets of the city, and finally, naked and covered with wounds, flung under the statue of Marcus Aurelius. The following morning, compassionate clerics removed the corpse and gave it a Christian burial. I got to underline that. Gave him a Christian burial. Next came Pope John the 15th, 985 to 996, who split the church's finances among his relatives and earned for himself the reputation of being covetous, a filthy lucre, and corrupt in all of his acts. Benedict the 8th, 1012 to 1024, bought the office of Pope with open bribery. The following Pope, John the 19th, also bought the papacy, being a layman, and it was necessary for him to be passed through all of the clerical orders in one day. Now after this, Benedict the 9th, 1033 to 1045, was made Pope as a youth, 12 years old, and some accounts say he was 20 years old, through a money bargain with the powerful families that ruled Rome at the time. He committed murders and adulteries in broad daylight, robbed pilgrims on the graves of the martyrs, a hideous criminal. The people drove him out of Rome. The Catholic Encyclopedia says he was a disgrace to the chair of Peter. Simony. S-I-M-O-N-Y. I didn't know what that was. Listen to this. Simony is called the buying and selling of the papal office, and it became so common, and corruption was so pronounced, that secular rulers stepped in. King Henry III appointed Clement II in 1046 to the office of Pope because no Roman clergyman could be found who was free of the pollution of simony and fornication. A number of popes had committed murders, but Innocent III, 1198 to 1216, he surpassed all of his predecessors in killing. Though he did not do the killing personally, he promoted the most devilish thing in human history. It was called the Inquisition. Estimates of the number of heretics that Innocent, not so innocently, killed or had killed ran into as high as 1 million people. All right, I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to put a bracket around that one. Remember, this is the first pope. This is Innocent III, and he started the process in 1209. He reigned from 1198 to 1216. In 1209, he started the Inquisitions. Now, we could sit here and say, yeah, but this Innocent, he was just an Adolf Hitler. He was an aberration. That's not true. This went on for 347 years. Actually went on for more than that. This Inquisitions lasted until about 1650. With a few little surges, I guess we could say, up to as recently as the 1700s. But it was endemic and it was systemic, starting with this pope in 1209. And I mean, they got after it hot and heavy, and this one pope killed 1 million people. Now, it's not as good as Hitler killing 6 million Jews, but, you know, for a religious guy, you know, Hitler wasn't running around saying, you know, turn the other cheek, you know, and love your neighbors. Hitler was pretty upfront about it. He said, hey, these people are scum and they need killing and we're going to kill them. You know, these popes, you know, at least from my vantage point in life, I thought that these guys are, you know, the Holy Joes and the Sky Pilots. These are the religious people of the biggest church in the world, by the way, at this moment in time. I suspect they've probably been about the biggest church in the world from day one. Today, they claim they've got over 1 billion people that are practicing Roman Catholics around the world. That's one person out of about every 6 or 7, you know, in the world is a Catholic. And this guy killed 1 million. So says the Catholic Encyclopedia. Hell, this is the official journal or publication of the Catholic Church. These guys aren't even hiding it. I guess the reason that they don't hide it is because it's so well known from other secular historical sources that they figured probably the best way to head off criticism is to just go ahead and publish it and then say, well, yeah, that happened in the olden days, but, you know, we're different today. We're not doing that now. Well, okay. I said the other day, these people scare the living hell out of me. I mean, now I'm not comfortable with Muslims. I'm not comfortable with Jews. You know, I take a look at the history of these people over here. I just gave you a report here a couple days ago. Today, in the 21st century, at this moment in time, you got 70 million evangelical Christians, of which about 20% of the 70 million, about 14 million, are beating the gong for war against Iran. I mean, that's kind of reminiscent of 60 million Germans over there beating the gong for war in you know, just before World War II. This war thing over here gets to be pretty serious. And I was watching Ken Burns, you know, World War II. It's about a 15-part series. It's been on public TV. You probably saw some of it. You know, that's just got awful serious business over there. I'd like to suggest that we all sit back here for a second. Hey, let's start thinking about what we're doing here, don't you think? this war in Iraq isn't going near as good as we thought it was. You know, even Adolf Hitler, you know, I think if he had that World War II thing to do over again, I think he would have done a little differently at Dunkirk, maybe done a little differently in the Battle of Britain, and maybe held off attacking the Russians until he got the Western Front under control. And, you know, I'd like to say, you know, even if you're for war over here, don't you think we ought to get this Iraq-Afghanistan thing completed before we take on another one? Do you really think we're ready to take on three in a row? Hell, even the Germans admit today they made a mistake by trying to fight two fronts at the same time. We Americans are pretty tough guys. You know, I don't deny that. We got a lot of big bombs. And maybe we're a little too cocky. Because these Sanjakis out here in Iraq, you know, are giving us quite a little run for our money, wouldn't you agree? I mean, these guys don't have any nuclear weapons. I don't think they've got a single tank. I don't see them running around in Humvees and Apache helicopters. They got us bogged down, fought to a dead draw. And then, I'm not even sure they got 160,000. They might. I don't know how many there are of them, but... Anyway, this war thing and this killing over here seems to be endemic, and it seems to be endemic among religious people. I mean, you got 14 million evangelical Christians beating the war gong over here. You got all these popes over here with these inquisitions. Fox's Book of Martyrs says 100 million in the inquisitions over 350 years. Oh my God, 100 million people. You know, that's everybody in the United States of America west of the Mississippi River. Now, that's a bunch of folks, and I got to sit here and say they weren't killed, you know, by Joe Stalin. As far as I know, old Uncle Joe, you know, wasn't running around telling you to turn the other cheek. He was out killing people as fast as he could. Old Mao Zedong and Chou En Lai killed 47 million Chinese between 1949 and 57. 47 million. They weren't running around telling you about Jesus and him crucified. They were killers. They never made any bones about it. They got right after the program. They killed people. Pol Pot over in Cambodia killed 3 million people. As far as I know, he wasn't particularly religious. Just went out there. A bunch of people needed killing, so he got after it. You know, we take a look here in the Middle Ages here. We're talking about guys like Genghis Khan. You know, he was a killer. And he just got right out there and got after it. These are people of the cloth. These are people following Jesus. These are religious people that are sitting here telling you we sit in the seat of Jesus, the humble carpenter of Nazareth, who says, turn the other cheek and love your neighbor as yourself and follow the Ten Commandments and thou shalt not commit adultery. And these guys are out here. They called the papacy over here the seat of harlotry in the Catholic Encyclopedia, for crying out loud. And so when I give you this report over here, you know, if you said, well, that guy Gordon, he's just an anti-Catholic. Yeah? Yeah? You can take that one to the bank. You know, you can't be very much for somebody that's this wicked and evil. I'm not for Adolf Hitler, and I'm not for Saddam Hussein. But I'm not sure that Saddam Hussein ever killed a million people, and this Pope did. You know, I'm not sitting here as a champion of Genghis Khan for crying out loud, but, you know, these guys, you know, that are the real killers of the world, the petty dictators, you know, that we like to refer to, you know, like Joe Stalin and Adolf Hitler and this guy, you know, Benito Mussolini and so on, you know, killers though they weren't running around as hypocrites. Jimmy Swaggart's a hypocrite. Jim Baker's a hypocrite. These popes are hypocrites. There just isn't any other way to describe it. So, you know, if you're a Catholic, you know, or a recovering Catholic, as my old gold broker, you know, Frank out in Boise, said, well, I'm a recovering Catholic. He's over 70 years old, and he says he's still trying to recover from Catholicism. He was institutionalized as a child in the Catholic Church. I was institutionalized in public education, and I'm still trying to recover from that institutionalization in public education. Hell, the scars of public education will haunt me to my dying breath. So, you know, I'm not opposed to Roman Catholics. I said the other day, you know, we have a lot of students now come through school here. You know, they come from all kinds of religious backgrounds and political ideologies and so on. So, you know, we're a non-sectarian law school. We don't sit here and discriminate against people because they're, you know, because they're Catholics or Baptists or something else. And sometimes I have some good words about people like Kent Hovind. He's a Baptist. I don't subscribe to Baptist theology, but he's a hell of a guy. He's just got a hell of a story here on creation and evolution. And I can relate to that, and I appreciate it, and I want to promote him. But I'm sure not going to promote this Catholicism. And this guy here in the Babylon mystery religion and the Bible and Revelation 17 doesn't promote Catholicism either. They condemn it in no uncertain terms for just exactly what it is. A murderous, filthy cesspool of perversion and evil beyond description. You'd have a hard time in English literature or language to describe the filth that goes on here. But I'm going to try. I'm going to give you a few more here. For over 500 years, popes used the Inquisition to maintain their power against those who did not agree with the teachings of the Roman Church. In conflicts with cardinals and kings, numerous charges were brought against Pope Boniface VIII, says the Catholic Encyclopedia. Scarcely any possible crime was omitted. Infidelity, heresy, simony, gross and unnatural immorality, idolatry, magic, loss of the Holy Land, death of Celestine V. Protestant historians generally, and even modern Catholic writers, class him among the wicked popes. So if you're looking for the most wicked pope in the history of the Catholic Church, Protestant historians and Catholic writers identify Pope Boniface VIII from 1294 to 1303 as that pope. You know, God in the Bible identified the most wicked king in Israel as being Manasseh. So, you know, it isn't that it's just the Catholics that have this, or it's just the Protestants here with Jimmy Swaggart or Jim Baker. You know, there's wickedness and evil going on. Here's my point. It spreads around pretty well among these religious people, which is why I've said, you know, these religious people are scary. Scary people. So if you're one of these religious people, you know, I'm gonna keep arm's length from you. I'm going to keep my eyes on you. Especially these evangelical Christians over here. You get 14 million people over here beating the war gong, you know. I'm going to bet on war with Iran. I mean, you know, this kind of in the bag. I'm sorry to tell you Iranians over there, you know, there's Iranians over there that listen to our program. I'm sorry to report this to you, but I've got my fellow Americans over here, and they say they want to go to war with you. They want to kill you. They want to rain bombs down upon your cities and kill your women and children. I don't want to do that. I could point to a bunch of other Americans that don't want to do that. But hey, listen, we Americans have a long, sordid history of killing people, of imperialism. I mean, we've been doing that for a long time, and we're good at it. So take warning. If you're an Iranian, get the hell out of your big cities. Get out in the countryside. Get ready, because here it comes. And it's coming from the Christians. Now, he goes on to say here that these Protestant historians generally, and even modern Catholic writers, class him among the wicked popes as an ambitious, haughty, and unrelenting man, deceitful also and treacherous. His whole pontificate was one long record of evil. It isn't necessary to insist that all charges brought against him were true, but all of these charges cannot be dismissed either. During his reign, the poet Dante visited Rome and described the Vatican as a sewer of corruption. He assigned Boniface, also Popes Nicholas III, Clement V, to the lower parts of hell. Now that was Dante, who visited Rome, said these three popes need to be cast into the lower depths of hell. Though seeking to put emphasis on certain good traits of Boniface, Catholic historians admit, however, the explosive violence and offensive phraseology of some of his public documents. An example of this offensive phraseology would be his statement that to enjoy oneself and to lie carnally with women or with boys is no more a sin than rubbing one's hands together. On other occasions, apparently in those explosive moments, he called Christ a hypocrite and professed to be an atheist. All right, now let's stop here for a second. Here's this Pope Boniface VIII. He's one of a long series, long history of popes. And he wrote a paper, and he said an example of this often phraseology, often in his writing, he said, quote, "To enjoy oneself and to lie carnally with women," I guess those are whores, "or with boys, isn't that child molestation, or with boys?" And this guy was a sodomite and a child molester. He's the Pope. And he's not the only one. I mean, he's just one out of many in a systemic operation called the papacy over here of this kind of immorality. So the immorality that you're witnessing over here in Boston, that's not just, you know, an aberration that occurred in one city in America. It's a systemic problem that comes right from the Pope down. Now, are all of these popes this way? Probably not. You know, not all Baptists, you know, are necessarily wicked and evil. I don't think that this guy Jimmy Swaggart was a Baptist. I think he was a Pentecostal, if I remember. And I'd say, well, you know, probably not all Pentecostals over here are whoremongers, you know, but this one is. You know, that's this guy. Probably not all Pentecostals are like Jim Baker, but you know, Jim Baker is. And these people were in positions of power in which they could kill literally millions of people. Now, you know, you take 347 years and 100 million people dead, that's a... Oh my God, that's, you know, defies description. Let's try this. 100, if I can do this in my calculator. 100,000, 100 million divided by 347. They were killing 288,000 people a year, every year for 347 years. Nearly 300,000 people a year died in the Inquisition for 347 years. If that isn't wicked and evil, write me an email and tell me what is, would you? Hey, I'm about out of time again, boys and girls. We're going to have to leave it right there. So let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Air time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.